he'd recommended in the bar downstairs. While he checked himself over, she stood behind him. He took off his glasses, and Sam stared at him in the mirror, at the flecks of gold and green in his blue eyes. She thought of kissing his neck, but did not. Downstairs in the empty hotel bar, Jackson greeted them both, introducing them to a man named Nick Ridgway, who was almost as tall as Dennis, but softer, his belly too big to button his suit jacket.
"First off, congratulations," he said, slapping Dennis's arm. "Fantastic news, fantastic. A lot of people out there have been rooting for you. I've been reading about it all day. You're one popular guy right now."
"Thank you," Dennis said.
"I've known Jackson for many years, and I was really flattered he'd recommend me to you, because I know how much he cares about you and your situation. I just wanted to have a chat with you today to see what kind of things you'd like to get out of a manager and what I think I could offer you." Dennis explained he didn't have any specific plans, but that Carrie had said people might want to interview him. Nick laughed and told him he was being modest. He threw out a list of people who were lining up to talk to Dennis and read some of the messages left at reception. "They've been screening calls from everyone so you could have your privacy while you adjust to things. How's that going, by the way?"
"I'd quite like to go out sometime today," Dennis said.
"Have you seen it out there? There's a crowd of fans and journalists. By all means, go out, but have a strategy, and right now I wouldn't talk to anyone. Give nothing away for free. I've been looking at the reaction to your case, and we need to capitalize. We need to start working on building your brand."
"My brand?"
Jackson and Nick explained how Dennis needed to market himself in a certain way to maximize his return on this situation. "In a settlement, you'll get a million. Couple of million, I guess, if you play this right. Do the media, write the book, market yourselves as a couple, too. I really think you could get upwards of 10 million out of this.
You know, if that's the way you want to go."
Nick leaned forward, his belt buckle digging into his belly.
Dennis agreed that it was, and they discussed what he might expect to happen over the upcoming days. Nick told them both to pose for pictures if people stopped them, and to give them a simple but unrevealing quote. "We're very happy," or "We're enjoying this new time together." Dennis held Sam's hand, and she moved her thumb in circles inside his palm, feeling the room rock her gently. She stopped listening to what was happening around them, sleepy with pleasure. Then Dennis stood abruptly.
"Get that cell phone set up, you're gonna need it," Jackson told them as they left.
Back in the room, they opened the iPhone.
"How do I turn it on?" Dennis asked, turning it over in his hands.
Once it lit up, he prodded at the screen, holding his finger down too long, clumsy, highlighting things, closing pages. Finally, he became frustrated and handed it to her. Together they created his first email address, dennisdanson1975@icloud.com, and took his library card, aged dollar bills, and the check out of his old wallet and put them into a black leather Dolce & Gabbana one. Sam tapped her number into Dennis's phone and got her own back out of the bag. There had been more missed calls and a few more emails. Work had called. She told him to call her so she had his number.
"How do I..."
Sam smiled and guided him through it. She showed him the internet and explained Twitter, Google, blogs, YouTube, apps. She enjoyed how closely he leaned in to look at the screen and how he looked at her when she showed him something that impressed him. Dennis tweeted for the first time.
"Hi," he wrote. And 8,000 people retweeted it.
Sam sighed. Her most successful tweet had had 7 likes and 3 retweets, and she had thought it was cutting-edge satire. They read about themselves on Huffington Post, and they took a selfie, Dennis sliding his glasses off and looking seriously into the lens. She took an eyelash off his cheek and tried to kiss him when he said,
"Can you show me the loggers thing?"
"Bloggers. Whatever." He stared at the screen, and Sam tried to find a blog about him. It didn't take long to find someone who thought he was obnoxious.
"What does this mean?" he asked.
"Right," Sam exhaled. "Cisgendered means you're a man who was born a man. Heteronormative means you're, you know, straight. White male privilege means..."
"Why are you laughing?"
"It's funny." He took back the phone and tried to scroll down.
"How do I go to the bottom, to lower?"
She showed him again how to stroke the screen, that he didn't need to press down.
She felt a band tighten around her skull. Suddenly it seemed as though she'd spent the whole morning teaching him how to ignore her.
Wow, he said when he reached the end of the blog post. This girl really hates me.
Sam stood and rubbed her eyes. Before we meet Jackson and everyone for the interview, can we go to the pool or something? I feel like I need some fresh air. 15. At the pool, people recognized Dennis straight away. Most looked for a beat too long, then turned and spoke in whispers that made Sam twitch. Dennis shook hands with people who came to say congratulations and posed for a couple of pictures. Some girls moved their towels off a pair of sun loungers for him, and he pulled his shirt over his head and left it there. The sun dazzled Sam, and she shaded her eyes watching the surface of the water glitter in the light. Dennis leaned down to feel the heat of the stone patio with his palm before walking into the pool. In the movie, she thought, he'd dive. Instead, he was awkward in the water, each stroke producing a noisy splash as he powered boisterously from one end to the other. Against the side, he stopped and breathed heavily, beads of water rolling over the contours of his muscles. Finally, he took his glasses off and left them on the edge of the pool, before diving under and emerging in the shallow end. That evening, as they got ready for dinner and an on-camera interview with the crew, Sam saw Dennis's pale skin had turned a hectic red. Oh, maybe we should have worn sunscreen, she said, rubbing lotion into his skin. She did it awkwardly, with the tips of her fingers, sensing the tension in his back as she did so. How long had it been since he was touched like this? She felt a degree of power, which surprised her. He sucked in his breath at the cold between his shoulder blades. You're just not used to the sun anymore, she said. You think? Dennis said, shrugging her off. They left for dinner with his skin still greasy with cream. His mood was dark, and he hissed in pain as Sam brushed his arm when she pressed the button for the elevator. But when Carrie, Jackson, and Patrick greeted them in the lobby, he lit up. Look, he said. My first sunburn in 20 years. He rolled up his sleeve to show them, and they winced in sympathy. They had booked a table in one of the hotel restaurants, in a room lit a soothing blue, and with a pianist in the far corner. Although the others were sharing a bottle of wine, Dennis only wanted sparkling water. When Sam looked at the wine menu, she felt him watching her, and decided she would stick to Diet Coke. How are you enjoying yourself, Dennis? Patrick asked. I really like to go out sometime. Around? I don't know. Must be pretty overwhelming, Carrie said, and everyone murmured in agreement. We've been looking at the internet, Dennis said. Carrie laughed. You're gonna have to be more specific, Dennis. At what people are saying? You know, comments. Oh man, don't look at the comments, Patrick said. Why? Dennis asked. I have to admit I've been looking, Carrie said, taking out her phone, flicking through with one thumb, still moving risotto from her plate to her lips. Sam forgot it could look so easy. Have you seen Twitter? Most of it's okay, but... She started to read aloud. Where are the white filmmakers getting black men released from death row? Hashtag white justice. It was an uncomfortable laugh. This shit is trending now. I lost like an hour of my life to this earlier. I mean, I guess they're right, but what can we do? Dennis put down his fork, the blood from his steak soaking into broccoli. I know. It's like it's a bad thing to be a white male right now. There was a pause, exchanged looks, and the table exploded with laughter. Sam was first frozen in horrified embarrassment, but eventually it got to her too and she joined in. Oh my God, you sound like my grandpa, Carrie leaned across and held Dennis's wrist. But like, seriously, don't ever say that in public, okay? Dennis nodded, confused, a new redness to his cheeks on top of the sunburn. Back in their room, the crew set up the camera and a light, positioned the chairs in front of the drawn curtains. Carrie powdered Dennis's face with some of Sam's makeup and angled the light to try and make him look less pink. She and Patrick had decided to interview Sam and Dennis together first. What's it like to be together so suddenly? Carrie asked. Surreal, Sam said, holding Dennis's hand, the arm of the chair digging into her elbow. Dennis nodded. Yeah, surreal. It's like getting to know each other all over again.
Right. Yeah.
He squeezed her hand. I didn't realize how much he's missed being in prison. We spent a lot of time today just looking at the internet, learning to use a computer and a touchscreen phone. I didn't even have an email address. You don't realize how much has changed until you have to explain it all.
It's going to take a lot of getting used to, but Samantha, she's so great. She's patient. I'm so lucky.
When they were being observed, they really existed, Sam thought. They were the couple she wanted to be. He was vulnerable, and she was caring. She wondered if they were always like this, and she was too caught up in herself to realize it. Then it was Dennis's turn on his own. They moved the empty chair so that he would be in the center of the shot, and Carrie smiled warmly before she started the interview.
How does it feel to be a free man, Dennis?
It's overwhelming. I'm overwhelmed by everything.
Can you tell us about what it's like to adjust?
Right. It's difficult to adjust. I hadn't slept in a couple of nights because I was moved from Roe so suddenly. I knew there was a chance I'd be released. I've been sleeping in the same place for 21 years, and I was used to the noise of it. Then I was here, in a different bed. It was so quiet in the hotel room last night, I couldn't fall asleep for a while. I'm used to the noise. The bed was so comfortable, I couldn't stop thinking about it. Last night we had a party, and I was up late, and that made me sleep until 9, which is something I haven't done in a long, long time. I'm a little disorientated, I guess you could say. Part of me wants to go out, anywhere, to the mall or something. And part of me can't figure out what I would do when I get there. Some people have given me checks, but I can't cash them because I don't have a bank account. I can't drive. I've never got my license. There are so many gifts in this room, everything I need, but I don't know how to use a lot of them.
Carrie asked him about what he'd missed most while being in prison. They talked about food and clothes and the gifts he'd been given. Then Carrie became serious. Do you have any anger or hatred toward Swain Nestor?
Is he the guy who actually killed the girl?
He killed Holly Michaels, yes.
Not really, no.
Why?
Anger isn't productive.
Do you think it's good her real killer is finally brought to justice?
Yeah.
Can you say that?
Say what?
That it's good her killer is finally brought to justice for the camera.
Oh, yeah, sure. It's good the real killer is finally brought to justice.
What are your plans? Do you think you'll turn your long incarceration into something positive?
My manager said we can probably capitalize on it.
No. I mean, will you be campaigning? Will you work with any groups?
For what?
A reform of the justice system. Abolishing the death penalty?
Oh. No, I mean, there's nothing wrong with capital punishment, just so long as the guy actually did it.
Carrie waved her hand. Cut. Cut. Dennis, I can't tell if you're being serious.
I am serious, he said, frowning.
After all that you've been through, you honestly think the death penalty is a good thing?
Not a good thing, he thought about it. It's necessary, isn't it? I'm not saying it's good.
Dennis, Carrie sighed. What are we going to do with you?
16. The crew left early the next day, and it was finally just them, Sam and Dennis, learning what it was like to be together. They filled out forms to get Dennis a bank account, everything complicated by his missing life, the fact he had no previous addresses, no current address for that matter, no history. They cashed the checks he had been given, and they were desperate to go out, but didn't know where to go or what to do, so Sam booked a car to take them to the Florida Mall, where they wandered with their fingers knitted together. Dennis posing for photographs when people asked. Others turned and took pictures as they passed by, arms extended. Dennis looking confused, until she explained they were taking selfies. Magazines interviewed them as a couple, and Sam kept a copy of every piece, tucked in her suitcase to stay flat. Dennis signed a 6-figure advance with a publisher for 2 books, one autobiography and one compiling his writings in prison, including the letters between Sam and himself. Sam agreed, but cringed at the idea of people reading her letters. They'd picture her, mousy and pale, alone in her dingy house, pouring her heart out to a complete stranger, she thought despairingly. She googled her name constantly and pored over the comments sections. Some people questioned why a man like Dennis would ever love a woman like her. They used words like fat, ugly, basic, groupie. Others asked why any normal woman would want a man like Dennis. They said she had what was coming to her. They said she deserved it. It hurt. Each comment rubbed away another layer of her until she was raw. But when she cried, Dennis held her. And when they were out, he linked his fingers with hers and he kissed her, his lips cold from the ice water he sipped constantly. He didn't say it, but she knew he wanted to show people he did love her. And she thought that was all she needed. It would make up for everything else. Once he had his ID, Nick booked Dennis for interviews on the late-night TV circuit and told them both to prepare to spend the Christmas season in New York. There was also talk of another movie based on Eileen Turner's book, When the River Runs Red.
Jared Leto's gonna be you, Nick told Dennis.
Who?
Sam showed him a picture on her phone.
He doesn't look anything like me.
They'll dye his hair. He's gonna totally inhabit the role. He's going method, so he wants to spend some time with you, observe you, learn what makes you, you.
Method?
Sam explained.
Absolutely not, Dennis said. Seriously, no.
One evening, he stopped outside the window of a jewelry store and told her to pick a ring, any one.
I never got to buy you one, he said, his hand on her lower back.
Sometimes she felt dizzy from how happy he could make her. Other times he was difficult, dark moods that swept in suddenly and made him quiet and inaccessible. They were together almost all the time, except for when Dennis was in the gym or, on the rare occasions, one of them went for a walk or a swim by themselves. The hotel room became more and more cluttered, their whole lives packed into one space. They bickered and sniped, and then spent silent hours lying still, loosely entwined, unsure what they were supposed to do or how they were supposed to feel. Each night, Dennis got into bed and Sam lay on the sofa. She would lie awake wondering why he didn't want to make love to her, whether there was something wrong with her, or if there was something else. Neither had any clothes suitable for winter in New York, so they shopped more, spending money as if it was nothing. They tried on thick winter coats, lined with goose down.
I've never bought a winter coat before, Dennis said, putting his hands into the deep pockets.
They took everything to the counter without looking at the tags, and he handed over a MasterCard and carried on talking.
Do you think it'll snow?
Maybe, Sam thought of Christmas lights, gloved hands and hot chocolate. She longed for the sensation of cold air, where outside was cooler than inside, her breath fogging in front of her face. They took the car back to their room and piled their new clothes on top of the old ones. Sam knew she would have to call her mum back to explain she wouldn't be coming home for Christmas and apologize for not calling in weeks. But so much had happened so fast. She ignored the calls from work and hadn't replied to the email they sent to tell her not to bother coming back at all. Sam hadn't wanted to speak to anyone from home because she knew exactly what they'd say. Now she couldn't avoid it any longer, so she excused herself and took the call on the balcony, sliding the glass door shut behind her. Her mother answered right away.
Sam?
It's me.
Why haven't you called me back? I've been so worried.
I'm fine. I'm still in Florida.
I know. I've seen the pictures. You've been in all the papers. Our phone hasn't stopped.
Then why did you say you were worried?
Because I don't know how you are, or whether you're okay with him.
We're happy. Sam leaned on the white balcony wall, watching a lizard skitter on the patio below them.
I can't understand it.
I love him, Mum.
He scares me.
Why?
You can't spend decades in prison and be a normal person. You just can't.
But he is normal. Sam moved back into the shade. He's sweet and kind and shy.
But he's a murderer.
He isn't a murderer, Mum. That's the whole point. They exonerated him. Sam heard her mother sigh.
I know it ended badly with Mark, but don't.
It doesn't mean you don't deserve someone who...
Mum, please.
Sam realized she was shouting.
You didn't mean it, sweetheart. We know you didn't. If you come back home, we'll find you help.
It went on.
Sam kept her back to the patio doors so Dennis couldn't see how upset she was. She wasn't ready to tell him about Mark yet, but she knew she would have to eventually. What if Mark sold a story? Was that possible now? Or if someone else did? One of his friends, maybe? Or even his mother, who'd called her from the hospital, using Mark's phone, and told her he refused to press charges, but that Sam was never to contact him again. One moment, a slip, was all it had been. It wasn't her. It was the games, how Mark had played with her, how he'd said he loved her, but he hadn't meant it. And then she'd just... She shook it away. They'd come while she was at work, cleared all Mark's things, and posted the key back through the letterbox. She wished he had come back and trashed her house, cut her dresses, smashed a window, anything to show he was angry or upset, anything at all. But in the end, all he felt when he thought of her was fear. Mark always told her right from the beginning their relationship was no strings. It was her fault when he hurt her. She understood that now. She'd known the rules, and she had ignored them, and pushed too hard. This time it was different, she told herself. Dennis was all hers. They were married. He was unquestionably committed. She wouldn't lose her mind again. Not even for a second. Even if she had to fold the bed covers and put them away every day before housekeeping arrived, to make sure no one knew they weren't sleeping in the same bed. Dennis needed time, she knew. Time and space after the confinement of the past 20 years. He was so beautiful, she sometimes forgot she was not. When he held her, and his fingers danced just under the edge of her t-shirt, she would hold her breath and hope for more. And when he curled them back into his palm and turned away, she would have to understand. He wasn't ready. That was all. 17. They left for New York a few days later. The flight made Dennis grouchy, his ears popped on landing, and left him temporarily deaf, separated from the world in a cotton wool shroud.
What? What?
He kept asking Sam as they navigated airport security, smiling agreeably at all the things he couldn't understand from staff and passers-by, nodding. Yeah. A car took them to the hotel, where a doorman greeted them with an umbrella to shield them from the freezing drizzle that didn't fall so much as float all around them. Their bags were loaded onto a cart, and Sam and Dennis made small talk as they took the elevator up to the 40th floor. Their room was all reds and golds, and at the center of it all was a huge four-poster bed with carved mahogany fixtures. They looked out of the floor-to-ceiling windows in the sitting area at the gridlocked traffic, and the light caught in the drops that rolled down the glass. Sam took Dennis's arm and put it around her. I love it here. It's cold, he said, pulling away. You're a curmudgeon, she said, smiling.
Curmudgeon? Samantha, I'm impressed.
When you say Samantha, I feel like I'm in trouble.
Maybe you are, he said.
And Sam felt it again, a kick of desire. Maybe it was a move, she thought. Maybe this would be where it happened. But then he started unpacking the cases, hanging shirts in the wardrobe. She left her clothes in her suitcase and slid it under the bed so he wouldn't complain. He took out his laptop and placed it on the desk in the sitting area. Sam tensed, remembering the determined tap-tap-tap of his one-fingered typing. For hours, tap-tap-tap, their hotel room silent, no television so he could concentrate. Dennis wouldn't let her read his autobiography, shifting his body to shield the screen as she passed. Whenever he left, she fought the urge to peek, to see the only thing he kept hidden from her. How bad could it be? More work and no play makes Jack a dull boy, she thought. The room had a couple of armchairs, a dining table, and a chaise longue. Sam took a pillow and lay down on the chaise longue, her legs hanging off the end, so that she had to screw up into a ball to fit entirely. Den, I don't fit on here. She straightened out again to demonstrate, and he looked around the room, his expression darkening when he saw there was nothing else. What shall I do? Sam tried to sound light, not hopeful, just agreeable, willing to compromise. I guess I've had a lot of good night's sleep now, he said. Really? Her heart beat fast. Where else are you going to sleep? She went to him, kissed him, and let him pick her up and drop her on the bed. She pulled him on top of her, holding him there so she could kiss him again. She wrapped her legs around his hips and pressed against him, his tongue hot in her mouth. A noise escaped her, a moan she wasn't expecting. He stopped. Are you okay?
Yeah.
She tried to pull him back.
Did I do something?
No.
You sure?
Yes. He started to pull away. She sat up, clutched his shirt, but he stood and stretched. I better finish this. He gestured to the clothes spilling from the case. Sam lay back, feeling her heartbeat between her legs. His phone buzzed on the bedside table. Can you see who it is? It says unavailable, Sam said, holding it to him.
What does that mean?
It's a private number. He held it in his hand and watched it until the buzzing stopped, passing it back to her with a shrug. As he folded another T-shirt to put in the closet, it buzzed again.
Answer it, he told her.
Hello?
Who's this? A man's voice asked.
Samantha, Sam said. Who's this?
Is Dennis there?
His tone was short, almost angry.
Who is this?
Tell him it's an old friend. He'll know what it's about. An old friend, Sam held the phone out.
Dennis stared at the screen for a moment before putting it to his ear.
Hello?
He held up a finger and disappeared into the bathroom. Sam waited a second or two before tiptoeing over to the door and pressing her ear against it. She heard nothing and sat back on the bed disappointed and anxious for him to come out. Dennis reappeared a few minutes later, wiping at the phone screen with his shirt and rummaging for his charger in the case.
Well, Sam said. Who was it?
Nobody.
He plugged the charger into the wall, the screen lighting up as he connected it.
Someone I used to know.
How would they get this number?
I don't know. How did you know him?
School,
he said.
Did you give anyone my number?
Course not, she said. Why would I?
I don't know how he got it, that's all.
You think someone's stalking you?
Sam was concerned, but he snorted.
Don't worry about it, it's just weird, that's all.
You want to go somewhere? We can get food or go for a walk?
I think I'm going to go to the gym for a while, he said.
Oh, Sam said.
Okay.
She watched him change, fold his old clothes into a neat pile in the empty suitcase, and pull on a grey T-shirt. As he was about to leave, he turned back and unplugged his phone.
Music,
he said, and left. She looked at his headphones still coiled on the dresser. 18. The next day, Dennis visited an ophthalmologist about the detrimental effect long-term imprisonment on death row had had on his eyes. 21 years of looking no further than a wall a few feet ahead had made his eyesight deteriorate, and the lack of sunlight had made him sensitive to brightness. Doctor prescribed eye exercises and new lenses in the hope of regaining some lost vision. Every day Sam sat patiently with Dennis, moving a pencil slowly towards and away from his eyes, listening to him breathe, feeling the space between them thick with tension. He'd go without glasses where he could, looking across Central Park with his face wrinkled in pain, until he had to put them back on. He got new designer frames that softened his face, and Sam couldn't help noticing the way the optician seemed to spend too long making sure they sat right on the bridge of his nose, her hands almost cupping his cheeks. He was told he'd receive the maximum compensation for his wrongful conviction, $2 million, but his lawyers promised they'd sue for more. There would be extra compensation for legal costs, but as most of the money for his appeals had been raised by supporters, Nick suggested they make a donation to the Innocence Project.
Yeah, it's up to you.
I don't know what else we'd do with it, Dennis said. Nearer Christmas, Sam stopped at the front desk and asked them if they could have a Christmas tree.
It's his first since he came back, you know? It would be nice to make it special.
No problem, the receptionist said, and booked them in for dinner at the restaurant the next night so the tree could be decorated in their absence. When they returned, the tree was glowing in the corner. Two stockings hung underneath the television. Dennis smiled despite himself.
Come on, Sam said, pulling at his t-shirt, is cute.
It's too cute, he said,
kissing her on the top of her head. Carrie and her girlfriend Dylan visited for New Year. They came back to their hotel room for drinks after dinner, already loosened by red wine and rich food. Dylan wore her hair short and had a smarter, more business-like dress sense than Carrie. They were different in many ways, Carrie more artistic, Dylan more academic. Carrie so brash and flippant, Dylan more considered and serious. But they worked together in a way Sam and Dennis did not. Sam noticed how they moved, limbs like water running over each other, whereas she and Dennis often collided with mistimed kisses and clumsy elbows.
This is nice, Carrie said. I could get used to visiting you in places like this. Much better than Altoona, right, Sam?
It's been amazing, Sam said, taking Dennis's hand.
You guys thinking of making New York your permanent home?
No, Dennis said, too cold.
Sam said nothing. She loved it here, and she didn't want to leave. Dennis often stayed in the hotel room, or walked only as far as the waiting taxi, as a concierge held the door open for them. But Sam walked for hours, closed her eyes, and smelled the air, sat in the windows of cafes and watched the people. She had started smoking again, secretly, hugging herself against the cold, spraying herself with perfume before going back into the room. She knew Dennis hated smoking. He was always complaining about the smell, or coughing extravagantly as they passed through a group of smokers on the street. But more than that, she just wanted to have her secrets, just as he had his. An old friend, she whispered, the words leaving her mouth with the smoke curling away into the air. Later, Carrie stood with Sam, looking over the view of the city from their window.
So, how's the honeymoon period going?
Oh, you know, Sam said, turning red. Carrie laughed, drunk, happy.
Maybe it's best you guys are still living out of hotels. You probably aren't getting much else done right now, right?
Sam thought of the night she and Dennis spent back to back, tailbones pressed together, of being woken by the sharpness of his elbow in her ribcage.
You're talking in your sleep again, he'd moan.
What was I saying? She'd ask, hot and clammy from dreams of him pressing her against walls and bending her over tables.
Who cares?
He'd yawn and turn away from her, pulling the covers tighter around him.
We're looking to settle down soon, Dennis was saying to Carrie and Dylan. We're tired of living out of hotels.
Come to L.A., Dylan suggested.
You would love L.A., Dennis. It's so you, Carrie said.
Well, we'll be flying out in time for the series premiere, Dennis said.
Maybe we'll stay for a while.
Sam's stomach lurched. He knew she didn't want to stay in L.A. She needed to get home to England for a while, get her house ready for sale. She wasn't ready to get back into the heat. She loved the days in winter that never quite got light, grey sky and orange lights from windows. When Dylan and Carrie left the next day, Sam and Dennis argued bitterly. He went outside for a run at 11 at night and didn't come back until 1 a.m. Ice cold when he slipped under the sheets, her skin jumping at his freezing hands.
I'm sorry, he whispered, shaping himself to her back.
Me too, she said. It's fine if we stay in L.A. a while. I was just being selfish. He thanked her, kissed her neck. She shivered as he held her. The cold he brought in with him seemed to drain the warmth from the room. 19. Over the next couple of weeks, Dennis appeared on talk shows, giving practice answers to the standard questions that everyone seemed to ask. What has it been like since you left prison? Can you forgive the Red River Police for what happened to you? Will you be helping others who are wrongly incarcerated? Dennis had sessions with a media coach on public speaking and communication. Controversial opinions, such as his indifferent stance on the death penalty, needed to be tamed or sidestepped entirely. The coach helped him formulate answers that wouldn't offend or divide people, that focused on forgiveness and understanding and moving on. She trained him how to share his attention between the host of the TV show and the audience, how to evade an awkward question, and how to maximize the impact of his answers with well-timed pauses and sincere eye contact. Their nutritionist brought him smoothies the color of swamp water and all-natural protein bars that looked to Sam like something you'd hang on a bird feeder.
Instead of coffee, he sipped on cups of hot bone broth that smelled like the Bovril Sam's grandmother used to have on winter evenings. He kept trying to get her to eat unpronounceable things like acai berries and echinacea supplements, but she drew the line after he gave her a coconut water that tasted, she thought, like sperm, though she couldn't tell him that. People told him what to wear, how to pose for photographs, where he needed to be and at what time. There would be someone to drive him there, and when he arrived, someone to take him to a room where another person would pluck stray hairs and powder his forehead so that it didn't shine in the flawed way regular people skinned it.
"You're ready," Nick told Dennis over lunch on a Sunday.
"I don't know," Dennis said. "Live TV?"
"What's the difference between live TV and being interviewed in front of a studio audience? You did great on Colbert. They loved you. Trust me, you're ready."
Dennis and Sam arrived at the Today's Talk studio on Wednesday morning, just before the show started broadcasting at 11 a.m. Dennis wasn't due on until midday, so he and Sam had some time to look around. The energy different to the late-night shows and pre-recorded interviews they were used to. The pressure of going out live creating an atmosphere buzzing with excitement and dread.
Nick called to wish Dennis good luck. "I'm sorry I couldn't make it," he said. "You'll be fine. Just relax and have fun."
Then Dennis was being whisked away to makeup, and Sam was left alone. She picked from a buffet table and made small talk with an America's Got Talent finalist. When Dennis was ready to go on, she walked with him to the stage door and held his hand, which shook slightly with nerves she hadn't known he'd felt, and she kissed him as the lighted sign above the doorway switched to green when the show cut for commercial.
"Good luck," she said, and let go of his hand.
He gave her a timid smile as another man in a headset walked him onto the stage. The set was a living room, all pastel colors, a fake window with a permanently blue sky day painted behind it. The room was cut in half, facing a black space where the cameras and crew faced in. Sam thought of Ed and his sinkhole, the way his house hung half over the abyss. Another crew member took her to a green room where she could watch the show as it went out. There were others there. The sister of a woman with a rare type of cancer, a man whose friend was on to talk about his best man speech that went viral. Everyone smiled to Sam as she entered. There was an advert for baby shampoo on the TV, and the water cooler burbled as Sam filled a plastic cup. Then the show was back on, and Sam felt the same flip in her stomach she felt every time she saw Dennis on TV. He was sat stiffly on the sofa, his hands resting on his knees. Sam willed him to remember what the media coach had told him about posture, about relaxed shoulders and appearing open. There were three hosts who sat together on a sofa to the side of Dennis. A man in a suit with Just for Men black hair, a woman in heavy makeup and a yellow dress, and a celebrity guest host who smiled too widely as they introduced Dennis with a brief rundown of his case and the new series on Netflix.
"First of all," the woman in the yellow dress asked, "you've been in prison for over 20 years. Did you even know what Netflix was?"
The celebrity laughed. Dennis smiled, but it fell away too quickly as he started to speak.
Not at first, no. People explained it to me. "Have you ever watched anything on Netflix?" the celebrity asked.
"Not yet. Not really a TV kind of..."
"For anyone who hasn't seen the first documentary, can you help them understand what happened in your case? It's one hell of a story if you haven't seen it already."
The man put his note cards down on the table and picked them up again while he spoke. But before Dennis could answer, the other host started to chat about the lost evidence, the false witness statements. Dennis watched them silently. A camera cut to a close-up of his face just as he looked up and into the lens. Sam jumped slightly, as if she'd been caught staring at him.
"So what does this new series add to your story?" the man said, suddenly turning back to Dennis, who stuttered in surprise, unable to formulate the answer he'd practiced so many times.
Evidence? New evidence, and what led to my being exonerated, of course."
"Because there was still a lot of questions left unanswered after framing the truth. Will people who have stuck by you since the first film finally get those answers?"
Dennis looked confused.
I mean, finally, Holly Michaels' family can have some peace, knowing that the man responsible for her murder is finally convicted.
Of course. Holly's father has previously been quite critical of the media attention surrounding your case.
It must have been difficult, Dennis said.
They're such a brave family.
What about the other families? The woman in the yellow dress said. She looked at her cards and then smiled. Pardon?
The missing girls of Red River, the man said. There was always the unanswered question after the first film. Who had been responsible for the disappearance of all those girls? It was assumed that whoever killed Holly also killed the other girls, but that theory was incorrect. Holly's killer, Wayne, he was pretty forthcoming in his confession to the murder, and as it transpired, two other murders that had remained unsolved. But he was adamant he didn't know anything about the missing girls in Red River.
Does this series attempt to answer the question of where those missing girls are?
There was a long silence. To Sam, it felt like a lifetime. She hadn't seen silence like that on television before.
No, Dennis said eventually.
Everyone at the table stopped smiling, even the celebrity guest, who looked at her cards and frowned.
Don't you think...
The series looks at the failings of the first trial and the ongoing effect of the first movie. It documents my journey to appeal the verdict and my eventual release. It is about the murder of Holly Michaels and the injustice that her family and I endured at the hands of a corrupt group of people.
Sam felt sick. It was everything he was supposed to say, but the tone was all wrong, with none of the inflection he practiced. She wanted to be with him. She wanted to squeeze his hand and whisper into his ear, just stay calm, just diffuse this.
But it's definitely still a question that a lot of people want answered. It's something that still follows you around, right? We had a couple of protesters outside the studio this morning. You're quite a controversial figure. It seems that there are some people who still believe that you are guilty.
But I'm not. Dennis shifted in his seat. He leaned in. Sam wanted to pull him back. It wasn't the right time to lean in. It looked confrontational, like he might pounce.
I have been exonerated.
They think you are responsible for the missing girls, the woman interrupted.
Well, they're wrong, Dennis said.
And I'm not here to talk about all that. I don't have answers for those people.
Of course not. Of course you don't have answers.
The man tried to lighten the atmosphere that was developing, and the co-hosts shared a quiet, uncomfortable laugh that didn't reflect anything that was happening between them.
But it must bother you, this question mark hanging over your head, no matter that you've been exonerated.
Yes, Dennis said.
It does. Some people will never be convinced of my innocence, no matter how much evidence is presented to them.
What would you like to say to those people? Dennis was out of his depth. Sam waited for him to say something, but he didn't. The camera zoomed in on his motionless face.
If you had the opportunity to put their doubts to rest once and for all, would you take it?
The hosts all watched him, waiting for a response. Sam no longer knew where this was going either, but it was making her uncomfortable. The others in the room were transfixed. She wondered if they even knew she was his wife. A part of her hoped they didn't. They all seemed to look at him with suspicion. One woman shook her head as Dennis spoke.
Yes, but I said already, some people will never be persuaded.
We could help you change those minds, the woman said, more to the camera, to the audience, than to Dennis.
Backstage, we have a trained polygraph expert and one of the leading body language specialists in America, as well as a man who worked for 20 years as a homicide detective for the NYPD. You could take an interview and put those questions to rest once and for all.
I'm just here to talk about the series, Dennis said.
Sam saw his Adam's apple move as he swallowed, watched him reach for a glass of water and then change his mind.
But the series doesn't tackle these questions, does it? So this is a great opportunity for you. The polygraph would take about half an hour.
They don't even use those anymore, Dennis said with a derisive laugh. They are completely inefficient and often entirely inaccurate.
Which is why we have a body language expert,
and an experienced detective who... It was detectives and experts who put me on death row for a murder I didn't commit. So thanks, but no thanks. Can we please talk about the series now?
Are you afraid of what the results might suggest? The man said. Sam knew they wouldn't let it go. She looked at the time in the corner of the screen and wondered how long until they cut to commercial again. Maybe Dennis could draw it out long enough that they would have to drop it and go to the next segment, she hoped.
Look, I'm not taking any fucking tests. We'd like to apologize for that language and to anybody who was offended. I'm sorry, okay? I'm sorry for that. I didn't mean to offend anyone, Dennis said to the camera. It's getting very hostile in here, the celebrity said, voice laden with concern. I'm not hostile, Dennis snapped. It's not the response we were expecting, the woman said, widening her eyes. What were you expecting? That I'd be thrilled at the opportunity to be interviewed by an ex-cop and ambushed with a polygraph test?
Stop, Sam thought, please. Stop talking.
I am here to talk about the new series which is about my exoneration, that I am not guilty.
Yes, but you said yourself there are still a lot of unanswered questions surrounding...
I didn't say that. Well, you said the new series didn't address the question of the missing girls. Because I don't know anything about the missing girls.
Please don't raise your voice, the woman said.
I'm done here, Dennis said, standing.
He unclipped his microphone and pulled it back through his shirt. It made a whooshing noise as it brushed his skin. A woman next to Sam tutted, and the man opposite laughed and shook his head. On screen, Dennis continued to talk, but the microphone was hanging from his hand and didn't pick up his voice. He was pointing. He unclipped the pack from his belt and walked away, looking back towards the presenters, who spoke to the audience, apologizing for the disruption. By then, Sam was sat with her face in her hands, her elbows on her knees, unable to look at the people around her. She stayed there while the music played over a clip of what was still to come on the show, and no one in the room said a word. Dennis pushed the door open and said her name. She looked up, and the light hit her eyes all at once. Little dots obscured his face.
We're leaving, he said, now.
Sam felt them all stare as she picked up her handbag and reached to his outstretched hand. He took her fingers in his and pulled her with him, dodging the people who moved towards them in the corridor. When they got to his dressing room, a member of security blocked the door.
My phone, Dennis said, I'd need to get my things.
Someone behind the man passed out Dennis's phone and his wallet.
I had a jacket, Dennis said.
They passed his coat to Sam, and then Dennis was pulling her away again, through the lobby and out into the street. Dennis waved to a nearby cab, and it rolled towards them slowly, not stopping entirely before Dennis had already opened the door and started to maneuver Sam in, his hand protecting the top of her head as she ducked under the door in a strange mixture of protection and control. 20. Back at the hotel, Dennis's phone lit up with notifications. There was a text from Carrie.
Oh, Dennis, I'm so sorry.
Kiss, 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 kiss. And missed calls from Nick, all of which Dennis ignored, turning his phone off and tossing it inside a drawer. Sam sat behind him on the bed and rubbed his shoulders until he shook her off. She listened to him rail against the hosts and producers and tried to reassure him that he didn't look like the bad guy in that situation. But she had glanced at the reaction on her own phone while he was in the bathroom, and she knew there'd been a shift.
Kate, seriously, shady behavior from America's number one creepy white guy here?
A Jezebel writer posted on Twitter, along with a YouTube video of the show that had already been watched tens of thousands of times. When Dennis came back, she flicked the phone to airplane mode and suggested he call Nick and see what to do next. It was unnecessary. Nick called the room from the hotel lobby and reluctantly Dennis agreed to meet him downstairs.
Listen, Nick said as they sat down in the bar, I've dealt with worse. I promise you it's important we write a statement, something that explains you were triggered by the interrogation, okay? Dennis, you've been through awful things, awful. You're bound to have some post-traumatic stress. These guys suddenly taking you into a room to be interviewed by a homicide detective? To strap you to a machine and ask you about school friends who disappeared 24 years ago? Unacceptable. No wonder you reacted like you did, and there are people out there who already see it this way.
They do? Dennis said, his eyes red and shining.
Most people are saying it was completely uncalled for, totally sleazy, and not just for you. What about the families of those girls? Having all that trauma dredged up for some light entertainment segment on a daytime show. Dennis, I never would have booked you on that show if I'd known.
I know. It's just such a fucking mess right now.
We can turn this around, make it a positive.
But even after releasing a statement, the tide of negativity didn't turn. Today's talk had returned to the segment later in the show. The body language expert and the homicide detective had given their opinions on what Dennis's behavior during his interview had suggested. They had both agreed that he was hiding something, that his body language showed defensiveness, and that he was evasive, never answering any of the questions directly, like a guilty politician. They were careful not to directly accuse him of any responsibility for the girl's disappearance, but the implication was enough to spark frenzied online discussion. A new wave of petitions calling for Dennis to take the tests.
Maybe we should just go to England for a while, Sam said, after another day holed up in their hotel room. Go somewhere you aren't quite as, you know, well known.
She was already tired of hiding, restless and itching for a cigarette.
I shouldn't have to worry about being well known. I haven't done anything wrong.
I know, but maybe we could both do with a break from all this. So much has happened, we've hardly had any time to be together.
We're together all the time, he said. I mean, it's all about the interviews and the photo shoots and writing your book. We could go away and just concentrate on us for a while.
I don't do this because I want to. What else can I do?
I didn't even graduate high school. It's not like you have a job.
I'm not criticizing you, Sam said, ignoring his comment. She sat next to him on the edge of the bed.
I'm saying that now you've done so much of that, maybe it's time for you and me to be alone and get to know each other without all this noise and drama.
We do know each other. You know everything about me, Dennis said. He sighed and fell back on the bed.
I mean, intimately, she said, her face flushing.
Dennis flung an arm over his face and groaned.
I'm sorry, but it's not like I don't think about it. Sam tried to control the waver in her voice. Sometimes I feel like you're not attracted to me.
Dennis sat up and held her while she cried. She felt ashamed for finally admitting it, and afraid that now there was no ignoring it, there was no way back. Perhaps he would say it was true, that he didn't feel attracted to her, and then he would leave her and she would have no one to blame but herself.
It isn't that simple, he said, as her tears soaked into his shirt. A lot has happened to me. I'm not ready to talk about it. Not yet. It isn't you. I'm gonna need time. Do you understand?
For a second, she was so relieved it wasn't about her, she didn't think about what he might mean. She told him she understood, and he kissed her temple gently. They lay down together, the bed still pristinely made from the morning's housekeeping. She rested her eyes while he played with her hair, coiling it around his finger, tighter and tighter until it hurt. The next morning when she awoke, he was already up, tying the laces of his running shoes. It was only 5:30.
Are you going out already? Sam asked.
My dad's in hospital, he said without turning around. Shot himself in the head. Blew out half his brains. His nurse found him. Called 911. Now he's lying in hospital being kept alive by machines at my expense.
Oh my God, Sam said sitting up. Dan, I'm so...
It's fine. It's not like we were close.
Well, even so, I'm sorry. Oh, Den.
Least he could have done was aim right, you know? Dennis made a sound somewhere between a laugh and a hiss. Anyway, now they're asking me to come down there. The son of a bitch had me listed as his next of kin. I need to sign papers if I want them to turn off the machines.
Can you believe that?
Is that what you want? Sam asked. They say he's unlikely to regain consciousness and that even if he did, he'd be reliant on the fucking machines for the rest of his life. So, yeah, it's what I want.
When did this... Sam looked again at the time. When did you speak to them?
About an hour ago, when I finally switched on my phone, he said.
Why didn't you wake me?
You look peaceful, Dennis said. You're a heavy sleeper.
Sam hugged him and told him she was there for him, whatever he needed.
I need to get out,
he said, standing and pulling on a thick sweater. I just want some space to clear my head. He returned an hour later, his cheeks red from the cold. I got you something, he said, grinning.
You didn't have to,
Sam said, confused by the change in temperament, wondering if he was okay or if this was some kind of psychological break. Close your eyes and open your hands.
Come on.
Sam did as she was told. Den, is everything okay? She felt the weight of something in her palms warm from his grip.
Open them, he said.
She looked at the object, something luminous green and plastic. It looked like a lighter, but bigger.
What is it?
It's an electronic cigarette.
Sam laughed.
I know you've been smoking. I smell it sometimes, and these are like cigarettes, but instead of smoke, it's vapor.
I know what vaping is, Dem.
It's chocolate flavor. It smells better. Try it. Sam put it to her lips, feeling ridiculous, thinking of the caterpillar in Alice in Wonderland.
Oh, my God, she coughed. Oh, it's disgusting.
Dennis's smile dropped.
But it smells so good.
You try it, she said, handing it to him. He inhaled and his face twisted in disgust.
It's stinging my mouth.
How about I just don't smoke, Sam asked. Dennis tossed the e-cig into the waste paper basket.
The smell, Dennis said.
Sam started to say she knew, but he stopped her.
I guess it reminds me of my dad.
I just hate it. She understood then, and she didn't want to be the person who reminded him of that. They went down as far as the hotel bar to meet again with Nick. There was no getting around the trip they would need to take to Red River.
First we need to deal with my father, Dennis said. Then we'll have to arrange some kind of funeral, I guess, and we can't just leave the house there like that. People will gut it if we don't get there first, like vultures.
How long will all this take? Sam asked.
A few days, a week, Dennis said.
We don't want to miss the premiere. Nick arrived, shaking the snow off his coat.
When it rains, it pours. Hey, guys. Dennis, I'm really sorry to hear about your father.
It's fine, Dennis said, and he laid out the plans to visit Red River and be back in time for the series premiere.
Nick sucked in the air through his teeth.
Not sure it's going to be quite that simple, to be honest. I've been speaking to Jackson, and we both agree it's best if you don't come to the premiere. And, well, with everything that's happening right now, and with your father, might be best if you lay low. You don't want to look like you don't care about his passing.
But I don't, Dennis said. And he isn't dead yet.
That's what I'm saying. I need to go all the way there to sign the papers.
But you see what I mean about how people might think it's a little cold if you just continue as normal, even though the guy was a bit of a, you know.
Asshole, Dennis said. It's my premiere. I should be there.
We have to think about what's best long term. For you and the series.
Listen.
Nick leaned across the table and held Dennis's wrist.
Why don't you take some time off and let me worry about your public image for now.
Red River 21 Lionel was in a private room, with bandages wrapped around his head like the Invisible Man. There were tubes coming from his nostrils and neck, and a pump forcing his chest to inflate and deflate with a gentle wheeze and beep. The nurses closed the door behind them while Sam and Dennis stood hand in hand and stared at the body in front of them. Sam turned away, feeling suddenly queasy. She had hated Lionel, but now she felt a sense of guilt. Standing near him as he lay completely helpless, not even able to breathe for himself. What had driven him to this, she wondered. Why now? Was it Dennis's release? Could a father hate his son so much? She imagined the darkness of those last moments, Lionel alone holding the gun. She hoped Dennis was right when he said that Lionel had probably been drunk, that he didn't understand what he was doing.
How long do we have to stay here? Dennis asked.
I'm so bored. Hungry.
We should eat before we drive to the house.
Is there anywhere good nearby?
I'll find out, Sam said, though they hadn't passed anywhere Dennis would eat on the drive from the airport. As they left behind each diner and drive-through, Sam became hungrier, her stomach growling and cramping.
They had eaten breakfast on the plane, arrived mid-morning, and driven straight to the hospital, hoping they could sign the paperwork and be on their way in time for lunch.
"What do you want?" Sam asked, trying not to see Lionel in her peripheral vision.
"Find somewhere healthy." Sam googled, "restaurant, healthy." "There's a vegan cafe about..."